John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. I welcome my friend and colleague, Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, Gatestone Newsweek and The Hill. The theme is blood cotton. From the 20th century, blood cotton became a way of describing countries that were exploiting labor, slave labor in instances. Mostly were identifying countries across Central Asia in that period where they were part Soviet, part ex-Soviet, but under the rule of apparatchiks who believed that exploiting labor was necessary and part of their job. That stopped. Why? Because there was a campaign to stop it by the manufacturers, by the brands, by the stores themselves saying, we must guarantee that our cotton is coming from lands where labor is respected. It worked. Gordon, a very good evening to you. I learned that the Chinese authorities, Beijing, has turned the world upside down. What have they done about the cotton from Xinjiang that we know is produced by slave labor?
Yeah, thanks, John. Beijing has whipped up nationalist sentiment because a number of companies have said that they will source cotton responsibly. There's an issue about cotton in Xinjiang, the northwestern part of the country, what the Uyghurs call East Turkestan, that it is harvested under slave labor conditions. Also, there are credible allegations of the use of child labor in picking cotton. And so a number of companies, including H&M, the European retailer, have said that they will not buy cotton that is not produced under responsible circumstances. They are the subject of a boycott, as are Nike and Burberry.
We welcome our colleague Steve Yates. He's former Deputy National Security Advisor in the Bush administration to the Vice President Cheney. He's now CEO of DC International Advisory and an observer for us on the Chinese authorities on the mainland. Steve, this appears to be a process driven by the central government. Can we guess that the consumers in China don't know about this, don't know that they're the world turned upside down? They're being obliged to buy products that the American and European and other markets have rejected. Do they know this, Steve?
No, Gordon and John, I think that some of the realities of today make what they're doing perhaps more effective, and maybe the people that are echoing their political warfare less knowledgeable. I mean, if we imagine what we've dealt with in the West about social media controls, in China, information is controlled even more. There's even more deep platforming of any kind of critical or contrary views. And so it's quite possible that the young consumers that would otherwise be sophisticated in their consumer choices don't actually know the realities of the labor conditions in Xinjiang, and that they buy the overwhelming messaging they're receiving of nationalist China in trying to defend attacks on China by the West. So I think that the militarization of information in China is now much more sophisticated, and these companies are caught in a very powerful vice. We have the woke movement in the world that wouldn't abide by the slave cotton from Xinjiang, and you have a very militant nationalist sentiment in China that won't abide by any accommodation.
Steve, I want to make sure I understand it. You believe that the consumer in China does not know that this is blood cotton and is told to boycott these brands for another reason. Is that correct? They're not told buy this because we exploit people.
That would be my going in hypothesis, just because we've seen for decades populations of people who seem genuinely not to know much of the details of the Tiananmen Square and broader Chinese uprising of 1989. There's very effective information control and education curriculum and social media and broadcast media. It is plausible that these activists are just blinded to the messaging. They're only open to seeing the messaging that is provided to them. And they think this is just an attack on China, and they're coming to China's defense.
Gordon, you have a question for Steve.
Steve, you talked about companies being in a vice, and clearly I think that's the case where you have, of course, China whipping up this national sentiment. But outside of China, people would be abhorred if they learned some of the practices that go on in Xinjiang with the Uyghurs and other minorities. What do you think companies are eventually going to do? Are they going to side with China, or will they side with others outside of that country?
Well, the only analogy I can try to draw from history that I think would apply to this is there seems to be a tipping point that you don't know until it finally arrives, and maybe after it's passed and it's too late. But if you look at the way people were willing to deal with apartheid South Africa, and there was a very mobilized movement to change that sentiment and those buying patterns, and then it finally got to a critical mass where people weren't where they bought one side of that story, and change began to happen. With the treatment of Xinjiang, it has been a slow murmur for years. Those of us who follow China closely have known about abuses for a very, very long time. But something seems to have hit a crescendo in recent months. There's broader awareness that there is a problem, the labeling of genocide by the State Department, but then other international bodies beginning to talk about it, the Parliament in the UK talking about it. It's just broadening the issue and the pressure to the point where I think companies who are very sensitive to human rights issues and justice matters in the United States now have to realize they don't get a blank check when it comes to dealing with China either.
This looks to me, Steve, to be another piece of the puzzle that we've run into recently with sports franchises or sports right. leagues. Basketball, now baseball would like an outlet in China. And I note that the Super League that lasted about 48 hours in Europe before the fans pulled it down, the Super League's explanation for why they wanted to make one great big elite group is so that we can sell it to Asia. And, of course, they meant China. So everyone's puzzling here what to do with the Chinese market that, as you say, has been militarized, weaponized by the Chinese authorities.
It has, and this has been an age-old struggle, and there are times when our conscience catches up to us and we feel like we're at a tipping point. It seemed like 1989 was one of those, and then it was not. We thought we might be approaching one of those with the EP3 crash early in the Bush administration, and it was not. You would think that what we're seeing with the crushing of freedom, democracy, rule of law in Hong Kong, plus these news out of Xinjiang would be one of those moments. And yet the world still seems prepared to entertain an Olympic Games in the country. So I think we might be pushing to a decision point where leaders of corporations and government finally feel uncomfortable enough that they know a different approach to China has to happen.
Gordon?
Steve, what should the Biden administration do on this issue? Because obviously it will have influence in what it says and what it does. What would you recommend that the president do?
First, I think that the president should advocate that the government provide support for manufacturers to diversify the supply away from China. The fact that 20% of the supply comes out of this part of China for the global market of cotton is a profound problem. But because it's 20% and not 50%, perhaps there are ways to help support companies to diversify to other sources. And then beyond that, I think that the administration should support a move of the Olympics away from China. It may seem symbolic. It may not even work. But I think that they have to begin leading an effort to show that you can't get away with slave labor and genocide.
I would like some communication from the American companies that this is going on, Steve. I think that would be a marketing advantage. Cotton, blood cotton, turned out to be a big winner for people who made it clear to their market, to their consumer, that they would not participate in buying products from slave labor. That was a competitive advantage. It would work here.
A lot of these brands are not actually selling cheap goods in the United States. People are already paying a premium, and I think that they would be quite upset if they're paying that premium and on top of it have to be complicit in this kind of a supply chain.
And therefore, it behooves these companies to pay attention to the politics. Gordon, that we can fault the companies not for being in a quandary, but for not taking advantage of the fact that they can trust the American consumer.
Yes, well, right now they're much more concerned about what Beijing is saying about them than what the American consumer is. And as Steve has talked about, there is a tipping point, and we need to get to that point as fast as possible.
Beware the American shopper. The only other force in the universe that's more powerful, I would say, is dripping water. Steve Yates of DC Advisory, a member of the Bush administration, dealing with China and Asia matters once upon a time. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Bachelor.